So I'm from UCSF, but I'm actually going to be talking about research that I did as a doctoral student at the UC Berkeley School of Public Health. So good afternoon, everyone. The title of my talk is Multiple Disadvantage, Substance Use Disorders, and Attrition of Low-Income Women in Health Policy Research. And I have no financial disclosures. So this study actually is part of a larger study that looks at attrition bias in longitudinal research, particularly in studies of low-income and hard-to-reach populations. So let me start by defining attrition as I used it in this study. Attrition is the loss to follow-up of study participants in longitudinal and clinical studies. That is, you interview or measure someone at time one, and then you're unable to find them for re-interview or to measure them again at time two, three, four, and that can be, that's different in all different studies. And there are different kinds of attrition. So random attrition, in which there is no systematic difference between the people who stay in the study and the people who are lost to follow-up, is theoretically does not introduce bias into a study's results. Different from differential attrition, which is a huge concern because the lost respondents have particular characteristics that differentiate them from the people who are found. And the risk of bias is thought to increase when the factors related to attrition are also related to the outcomes of interest. But these factors may be measured or may not be measured and may be known or may not be known by the researchers. So even random attrition may introduce bias if you're not measuring all of the relevant factors. So differential attrition and low response rates both contribute to the possibility that the findings will be biased. For example, they can change the sample so that the study sample does not any longer represent the study population, introducing problems of generalizability and external validity, or they, I didn't touch this. Wait, let me see if I can go back, sorry. Okay, I didn't do that. it can also lead to inaccurate estimates within the study, which is a threat to internal validity. I'm afraid of this now. Okay. So this study looks at multiple disadvantage, substance use, and attrition. And I'm looking at that because an accumulation of disadvantages actually has a marginalizing effect on people. It certainly has negative effects on health. It has widespread destabilizing effects on people's lives, and it may increase the risk of differential attrition. And I'll be talking more about that in my results. Also, on, regarding substance use problems and attrition, the results are conflicting. So some studies find that problem drinking and other substance use contributes to attrition. Some find that they don't. But in any case, very little research on substance use and attrition among women has been done. So why focus on women? Heavy drinking and drug use are not congruous with women's prescribed social and biological roles, and they can confer a lot of social and personal stigma to women, particularly women on welfare, who drink and use drugs. They're characterized as the undeserving poor, and they are further stigmatized. In a previous study that I did, multiple disadvantage was associated with increased attrition in a mixed gender sample. So I was wondering if accumulation of all of these factors have a particularly marginalizing, destabilizing effect on people's lives that would contribute to them being lost, lost to follow-up. The data source was the Welfare Client Longitudinal Study, which is an ongoing survey, or was an ongoing survey, of cash aid recipients in a California county. There were women who were receiving TANF, which is Temporary Assistance for Needy Families, the federal program for adults raising minor children, and General Assistance, a locally run program for adults basically who don't qualify for TANF, which provides much less money and many fewer benefits. They were first interviewed when they applied for aid at all of the county's welfare offices, and if they received aid, they were then sampled into the WCLS. And the WCLS researchers oversampled heavy drinkers and drug users, so we would actually have enough of those populations to be able to analyze them, which often doesn't happen. Very intensive follow-up procedures were found to re-interview these folks. Some of them got more than 50 phone calls before they were found or the researchers gave up. Some of them got almost 30 visits to their homes, their contacts' homes, to soup kitchens, check cashing places, prisons. And the WCLS researchers also employed a special tracker who previously had been a private investigator to find the most difficult cases. So this is extraordinary effort, actually. In this study that I'm talking about today, it just looks at substance use, multiple disadvantage, and attrition using the women from the WCLS. It was 498 people. Took the variables from the baseline data in 2001, and then their participation status at year two. So whether or not they were interviewed at year two, whether or not they were found for re-interview at year two. The people who refused, it was actually only one woman, was counted as found. And there was an 88% response rate at 12 months. So the hypotheses that guide this study, that there's an association between problem drinking and multiple disadvantage among women who receive welfare and cash aid. I'll describe multiple disadvantage in a minute. Other substance use variables were also looked at. So in all of the models, they were done sequentially with problem drinking and then a number of other variables that I will describe as well. Hypothesis that multiple disadvantage is associated with attrition 12 months after baseline. And that problem drinking is associated with attrition 12 months post-baseline. So the sample was relatively young. You can't really tell from this, but only about 5% of the women were over 50. Largely minority sample. Most of the people in the study were from the TANF program. Many fewer from GA. Most of them said they were not married or cohabiting. Now this may be They may not have been married or cohabiting, or this may have something to do with welfare eligibility rules. So we don't really know. And most of them were raising children. Again, you see most of them were from TANF and eligibility rules. Okay. Yeah, I know, how interesting. So the multiple disadvantage is a summary variable that I used in this study. So there were 9 indicators of disadvantage. And these were chosen and developed specifically for this population in this county. So severe housing instability, for example, doesn't include people who are stably doubled up with friends or relatives. Women might have been unemployed for more than a year. And these are the numbers, by the way, out of the 498 of how many of the women reported these disadvantages. Very low income, disabled and unable to work, incomplete high school education, a high neighborhood disorder, which was an 8-point scale. Living alone, very few of the women lived alone. Social isolation, which meant you didn't have anybody to talk to or to help you out, friends or family, also very few. Stop that. And non-white race and ethnicity. And that is because in this county, not being white puts you at much greater risk for poverty and for being on welfare. The 498 women, 120 reported that they had 4 or more of these disadvantages. So I also describe these women as severely marginalized. Imagine in a general population study, 4 or more of these disadvantages, what that would look like. My substance use variables actually have been previously used in studies of this population. So I had 82 problem drinkers, and that was 2 of the 3 criteria, binge drinking more than once a month or once a month, any alcohol dependence symptoms, from the DSM-4, and reporting any negative consequences of drinking. Heavy drug use was defined as weekly drug use, weekly or more frequent drug use of illegal drugs or unprescribed prescription drugs. Boy. And then there was a substance-dependent variable, and I broke that up into alcohol dependence and drug dependence. And so these were all self-reported at baseline for the previous year. Oh, and My methodology slide, my analysis slide seems to have disappeared. So I'm just going to describe, as I describe the results, I'll mention the data analysis rather than try to do it without a slide. So the results. Reporting four or more disadvantages was associated with problem drinking and with heavy drug use, with self-report of poor and fair or good or excellent health versus good or excellent health, and these are all significant associations. Women who had four or more disadvantages also said they had low sense of control over their lives than women who did not. They were more likely to have been in jail or on probation in the previous 12 months. They didn't have custodial children in the household. You know, that's very highly associated with being on general assistance. And they were over 35, also highly associated with being on general assistance. There were no associations between partner violence or other violent victimization, and none with psychiatric distress. So looking at the disadvantage indicators, the indicators of disadvantage, I'll just do this over here because my little pointer is broken. Can you hear me? Am I? So none of the indicators were significantly associated with being lost to follow-up 12 months after baseline. Severe housing instability and long-term unemployment were both approached statistical significance and had odds ratios of almost 2. But reporting four or more disadvantages was significantly associated with being lost to follow-up. That is, researchers were unable to find these women for re-interview 1 year after their baseline interview. So in the previous associations were done using an F statistic that approximated a chi-square. Basically, we used a survey research command in STATA. So in multivariable logistic regression, four or more disadvantages in all of the models, this is the problem drinking model, but all of the models remained associated with attrition 1 month after baseline. Also being 24 to 34 years old, as opposed to being 18 to 24 or over 35, problem drinking was associated as well, independently, with being lost to follow-up 1 year after baseline, as was drug dependence when we substituted that. Alcohol dependence was not significantly associated, but you can see there was an association, probably because there are only 34 respondents, so it's much more difficult. You don't really have the power to detect it. And heavy drug use was not associated at all. So this was adjusted for age, health status, marital status, parental status, and psychiatric distress. So I found that multiple disadvantage and problem drinking and substance dependence all contribute to attrition 1 year after baseline. That is, it makes it more difficult. The researchers have more difficulty finding these women 1 year after baseline. Women drinking and drug use have layers of cultural significance. They have elements of social control. There are personal consequences for women, and these may all contribute to making it harder to find these women a year after baseline. Sorry, it's very distracting. And racism, classism, and sexism may combine to form a triple jeopardy of stigma and marginalization. That is not my idea. That's, you know, something you hear in the literature a lot. So welfare receipt and substance use may add to these effects of cumulative disadvantage. It's very difficult to untangle this. So more research is needed to determine how to retain women in longitudinal research with substance use problems and multiple disadvantages. And I'm not saying only in studies of low-income women. I mean, in general population studies, we really want to find the more marginalized respondents and keep them in the study, and that's often not done. Also, what are the effects of differential attrition? Who are we really missing? You know, and what are the effects on our findings? You know, are we actually seeing the extent of the problems that we're looking at? Are our results accurate? And by the way, I actually did another paper after this and found that by leaving out the hard-to-reach women, a very different study. We actually affected, we introduced bias into the study, but we didn't have attrition bias in this particular study. And what is the effect on policy and practice of using exclusionary research to develop policy and practice? So this had significant limitations. One of them was using baseline survey data and participation status at 12 months, because all of these variables can change over 12 months. But actually, the reason that I did that was I wanted to compare lost and found respondents, and obviously I didn't have data from the lost respondents at 12 months. The study population included many respondents who belong to categories that are considered hard to reach. So with our good response rate, this was actually a really good data source to use for the study. But it was done on women in one California county, so generalizability has to be done only with caution, particularly to men and other low-income populations. And one of the big problems that I found with this study was the measure of psychiatric distress. It was the Global Severity Index from the Brief Symptom Inventory, the DiRogatis measure. And it was done for the week before women applied for aid. So this is a time in women's lives when they're going to be under a lot of psychiatric distress. You know, a lot of them had to move because, you know, they didn't have money, and then they applied for welfare. So this, I think, is a really bad measure of a woman's general psychiatric state. I really didn't feel comfortable looking at co-occurring substance use and mental health problems. I actually got some pretty significant results from that, but I didn't think that the measure was valid for that. Also, because of the way that I did the marginalization, the disadvantage index, I really wasn't able to pull out the look at interactions between disability and disadvantage or race and disadvantage. And in future studies, I think I'm going to do it a little differently. Also, no sexual orientation variables in the survey. So that was, I didn't like that very much. So I'd like to acknowledge my the PI of the WCLS, Dr. Laura Schmidt, my dissertation committee, the welfare study, welfare client longitudinal study team, and my colleagues at the Alcohol Research Group, where I was a pre-doc, and my funders. And I want to get out of this so that you don't see these extra slides. Thank you. Sorry for the...